This is Marketplace After the Bell. I'm Scott Jagow, and I'm here to make sense of what happened this week in business and the economy. It's Friday, June 5th. This was the week you had to ask, who has changed their tune? Is it Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke? He warned Congress about deficit spending after months of government stimulus and cash injections. Or how about GM? Not long ago, GM said bankruptcy wasn't a viable option. Well, now it's so viable that when the company filed for bankruptcy this week, GM said there's no other alternative. Stock market investors are singing a different tune. A couple months ago, all you could hear on Wall Street was the growling of bears. Now many of those bears have grown horns, and they sound a lot like bulls. And let's not forget consumers. They're not doing the credit card waltz anymore. It's more like the savings account salsa. The personal savings rate is at a 14-year high.
Marketplace, providing you what you need to know about business and economics on air and online. Explore everything Marketplace has to offer, from explainers on technical terms to stories on personal finance at marketplace.org.
It may have felt anticlimactic, but Monday was a historic day. After 101 years in business, GM filed for Chapter 11. The company fought this for as long as possible, with some help from the taxpayers. But just last December, GM's company line was that bankruptcy would be disastrous. Here's what then-CEO Rick Wagner told NPR.
We can't dismiss any options, but it's my view that that is a highly risky strategy. And so we highly risky from the standpoint of the company, the industry, and the economy.
But by February, GM was already starting to change its tune. Here's what Wagner said at that point.
In the 11 weeks since our initial plan was filed with Congress, the condition of the U.S. and global economies, as well as the industries, auto industries, has significantly deteriorated.
About a month later, Wagner was out of a job. And the new CEO, Fritz Henderson, was singing the new company line, which was that bankruptcy is a very real possibility. In Monday's filing, Henderson admitted there was no other alternative. So that's how we got here. Now, how does GM move forward? Well, according to Henderson, with pure, unadulterated speed. GM needs to get through bankruptcy as quickly as Chrysler, in about a month. But GM is a different beast. Kai Rizdahl asked our New York bureau chief, Amy Scott, what's the rush?
GM is obviously a much bigger company, and its reorganization will be much more complex. But there is a lot of pressure to get out of bankruptcy and really out of government ownership before too much damage is done to GM's brands.
So with car sales at 9.3 million a year in this country, that's not a good thing for the whole auto industry. But there has to be opportunity here for somebody, right?
Right. The obvious beneficiaries are the Japanese automakers that have been making a bigger push in this country, Toyota and Honda, and of course Nissan. GM's market share is expected to drop from around 20% to more like 12 or 13%. So somebody else is going to snap that up, or maybe a few somebodies, and one of them is Ford. On one hand, Ford won't have had the same opportunity to shed some of its legacy labor and healthcare costs the way that Chrysler and GM will have in court. But analysts say Ford's done a pretty good job of restructuring on its own, and it's making more of the cars that people are excited about. So Ford's in a good position to benefit from any customers that do shy away from Chrysler and GM. And one analyst told me that Ford is expected to surpass GM in sales in the next 12 to 18 months.
So with that pressure mounting, GM's mission is to reinvent itself quickly. It got to work on that this week with a new campaign that sounded like a different tune.
There was a time when eight different brands made sense. Not anymore. There was a time when our cost structure could compete worldwide. Not anymore. Reinvention is the only way we can fix this. And fix it, we will.
What you can't see is the images that GM is using in this ad. American flags, footballs flying through the air, charging horses. I think you've seen that commercial before. So it's easy to be skeptical about GM's reinvention. Reporter Sarah Gardner talked to Marissa Gluck of Radar Research about it.
I think that saying now that GM is ready for change when they haven't responded to market conditions for the last 10 years feels kind of empty. It feels like a hollow promise.
Gluck says GM's money would be better spent on a PR campaign using websites like Twitter and Facebook with honest talk about the company's mistakes and future plans. GM, in fact, has set up a special website complete with live chats, Twitter links, and even blog posts from GM CEO Fritz Henderson. Scott Lackey at Jugular Advertising in New York says GM has to answer consumer concerns directly.
And the number one consumer concern, and I'm quite sure of this, will be, why should I buy a GM vehicle when they may not be in existence in 3, 4, 5, 6 months?
Consumers need straight talk, not feel-good images, says Lackey. After all, they're about to own 60% of the company.
It's kind of like taxpayers are composers. They've written a new jazz tune for GM. But the GM Symphony is used to playing classical. So you have to wonder how this performance is going to turn out. Commentator Robert Reich asked the obvious question here.
So why exactly are we doing this? Maybe because the sudden dissolution of an American icon like GM would be a blow to the American psyche, further eroding confidence during this deep recession. Yet under normal bankruptcy, the GM brand would likely live on, and GM's other valuable pieces would be bought up. Over the next decade or so, GM, as we've known it, will likely disappear in any event. The government's huge stake in it merely slows down this process. Which I think is the point. The government is investing some $60 billion in GM in order to slow its demise and thereby give its workers, suppliers, dealers, and the communities that depend on it more time to adjust. But if the purpose is to help the Midwest adapt to industrial decline, investing that much money in GM seems an inefficient way to accomplish it.
But on the upside, GM is speeding toward its goal of being leaner. There were reports this week that both Hummer and Saturn are being sold. So maybe this won't be the same old GM. This is Marketplace After the Bell for June 5th. I'm Scott Jagow. Earlier, I asked whether Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke had changed his tune. After his testimony to Congress this week, a lot of people said yes. But I'll let you decide for yourself. This is what he said last October about the need for a stimulus package.
Any fiscal action inevitably involves trade-offs, not only among current needs and objectives, but also because commitments or resources today can burden future generations and constrain future policy options between the present and the future. All that being said, with the economy likely to be weak for several quarters and with some risk of a protracted slowdown, consideration of a fiscal package by the Congress at this juncture seems appropriate.
So Bernanke expressed some concern about deficit spending, but he thought that a stimulus package was probably necessary. And of course, Congress did pass one. But this week, Bernanke emphasized the concern part, that a growing deficit could be troublesome down the road.
Even as we take steps to address the recession and threats to financial stability, maintaining the confidence of the financial markets requires that we as a nation begin planning now for the restoration of fiscal balance.
So, erasing the deficit at some point. What Bernanke said isn't all that different from his first speech, but it makes you wonder why he's saying it now. Amy Scott looked into that.
Lately, bond investors have started worrying that all that deficit spending could lead to higher inflation. They also worry that all the borrowing could make the U.S. government less creditworthy. So as the Treasury sells more long-term bonds, it's having to pay higher interest rates. Axel Merck is president of Merck Investments. He says the Fed is counting on low interest rates to jumpstart the housing market and revive the economy.
The best thing that the Fed can do is try to talk down interest rates, talk some calm into the market so that the cost of borrowing doesn't soar.
Today, Bernanke downplayed any concerns about inflation. But in the last few months, market predictions of inflation have jumped. Guy Lebas is a strategist at Janney Montgomery Scott.
In reality, one of the best indicators we have about future inflation is the market's expectations of inflation. So I'm quite sure that the Fed was watching those figures.
And the Fed says it is nimble enough and can react quickly when signs of inflation do crop up. But the recent precedent in the financial system is that regulators, investors, banks, just about everybody didn't react quickly enough. You would think investors would be extremely cautious at this point. But if you look at the current market rally, you can make a case that people are being rash again. Kai talked to behavioral economist Dan Ariely about this.
You know, the economic theory basically tells us the free markets can work fantastically, but under very, very small set of circumstances. And it's, I think, clear to all of us that right now these circumstances don't hold in the market. So, you know, we talked a lot about cheating in the past, mm-hmm. but think about the following. You have individuals who are bankers who have really perverse incentives where they can make a lot of money, where their investors make money, and they don't lose when their investors lose. What does that mean? It means that they have a huge incentive to take extra risk. Mm. What about the rating agencies? They've been basically giving people AAAs when they shouldn't have gotten AAAs. Me as a consumer, I can't go and read everything and understand everything and basically get my own reputation rating, credit ratings. So I trust these entities. They have clearly failed us.
For those who are in the markets, though, how do you separate your short-term interest of wanting a gain, wanting a return, with the more widely desirable goal of long-term increases in market value?
This is very tough, and I think this is the reason why we're not really taking any action right now. Now, because it's emotional, we're not going to do it. We personally, for individuals, it's very hard to go now and protest when the stock market is doing slightly better and start creating local activity groups that will basically try to persuade the government to do something to regulate the market. Mm. And because of that, it's unlikely that the government will get into action and try to create substantial regulations. So I'm actually very worried about this. And I think in many ways it would have been better for us as a society in the long term if the stock market didn't recover and if we would have had a continuous bad situation for another 6 months. It would have been painful 6 months, but 3, 4, 5 years from now, it would have been in a better situation if that was the case.
It is kind of nerve-wracking to think about what's still out there. Commercial real estate loans, Alt-A loans, they have longer time frames and their implosion could still be forthcoming. It's possible that this new tune of optimism is premature. I'm not saying we have to sing the blues every day, but I don't know if it's time to change the tune quite yet. That's Marketplace After the Bell for this week. I'm Scott Jagow. I'll be back next Friday to make sense of what happened in business and the economy. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next week.
American Public Media.